Audits to order, and today, members, we are going to hear from the Secretary of State's Audits Division first, and they're going to probably take about 30 minutes or so, and then we're going to hear from the Department of Forestry is here to talk about the response of the audit that that just came out a couple of weeks ago from the Secretary of State's Audits Division, and their response was due on Monday, last Monday. One of the things that I would point out is that this is also part this management letter that came from Secretary of State's Audits Division is part of the overall state financial audit that is due every just done every year, and that final will be released to all of us, I believe, on February 28th, I think is the target date for having that done. And I see Kathy Filano is nodding, so that would be affirmative. So, without further ado, let me go ahead and bring up Kathy and Nancy from the Secretary of State's Nancy Young from the Secretary of State's Audits Division, and they're going to kind of walk through the management letter with us a little bit. So you might want to pull that out first, and then the and hopefully you've all had an opportunity to review both of these documents, the Audits Division letter as well as the response from the Department of Forestry. So let me turn it over to you, Kathy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. For the record, Kathy Polino with the Secretary of State Audits Division. And with me is Nancy Young. She's one of our audit managers responsible for our work here at Forestry. Whenever we talk about financial audits, I'm prepaying for this because I know a CPA or some other thing will pop out of my mouth as we're talking. So I'm going on record as to buying at least one acronym.
Thank you.
Just to piggyback a little bit on Chair Krummel's comments to start with, we do, as we talked about before, an annual audit of the state's financial statements. And in order to do that work, we do go and visit 15 or 16 different agencies. The numbers change a little bit every year. And we audit somewhere in the neighborhood of about 125 accounts to be able to opine on the state's financial statements. The work that you see here today, the results of that work comes in kind of two forms. One is we get our opinion on the state's financial statement, and that opinion gets included in the comprehensive annual financial report that the Department of Administrative Services produces. So it's a page that we insert into their report. The second product that comes out of that work is what's called a Federal Compliance and Internal Control Report that we issue every year about the end of February. And it looks like this. This is last year's report, and it's about this thick. There's a lot of really good information in this report on the findings that we have during our statewide audit work at all those various agencies gets compiled and put into this report. Kind of the mechanism that we have for collecting the information, we do this audit work, we start sometime around June or July of each year, spend a lot of time out at those agencies doing our work. At the end of the work, we issue what's called a management letter, and that's what you have before you here. The management letter is our final written document to that agency on what our findings are, and actually these will be lifted verbatim out of this letter and into this federal compliance report. So this really is our final product to the agency. And then what you will see is the agency's response to the report and their corrective action plan is their final response to us on their response to our findings. They will be lifted verbatim from their letter that you have before you also and put into this federal compliance report. So this report here is basically at the end of February. We will have all those letters and everything pulled together, and the final report is a compilation of those management letters when they go out.
Mr. Chair. Representative Butler.
Just a quick question, Kathy. So that I understand, the indication is that this is not a comprehensive audit of the agency, that the regular audits of the department will continue on a periodic basis. What generated this particular audit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, this audit is part of that annual audit we do of the state's financial statements. The management letter is the findings that came out of the work that we do as part of that. And if you look into the management letter, I'll just kind of briefly show you what's in this letter. You'll see the front part of the letter is a description of the, I mentioned that we audited about 125 accounts at all these various agencies. 22 of those accounts were at the Department of Forestry this last year, and you can see that the list that's on that first page of the letter are the accounts that we went in and did our testing work on. What you also have in the report is what we call reportable conditions. And so those are the ones, the findings that you will, we will end up reporting in our federal compliance and internal control report. So reportable conditions are those that we feel are significant enough to warrant mention in that report and a response from the agency with a corrective action plan. Sometimes in these management letters you'll find other issues that come up during the course of the audit. They're ones that we don't consider as significant as reportable conditions, but ones that we want to just convey to management anyway. This particular letter doesn't have them, but some of the other management letters you might see other conditions in it. Those are things that we notice during the course of our audit work that we want to convey to management. We don't expect a corrective action plan on those. They're simply things we want to note and turn over to the agency to deal with. We do follow up on those also, though, the next year when we go back to do our audit work.
So, Mr. Chair, if I can follow up on that.
Follow up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kathy, this is part of the comprehensive annual audit, a portion of it, and then the accounts that you've limited to, you've listed those accounts. These accounts would be available to view on the regular financial statement of the agency. So when I'm looking at the regular agency's annual June 30, 2004 financial statement, I will actually see account titled undeposited or unreconciled deposits. And I'll actually see other accounts billed and unbilled. Is that standard operating procedure to not have the books reconciled and billed and current and up to date when they turn them over for the regular Secretary of State's audit, annual audit or periodic audit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, yes, these are all items that you will find in the state's financial statements.
Yeah, in this particular agency's financial statement.
Well, they all roll into the single audit of the state's financial
statement. Certainly, but the Department of Forestry actually has with their regular, they have a whole bunch of unreconciled and unbilled items that they're wrapping up the year with. That rather than clean up a financial statement and give it to the, or publish it for compilation with the rest of the financial statements of the state for your comprehensive annual financial report that you prepare, they'll actually have items in there that are unreconciled that they're just too busy or not getting done. What's happening there?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nancy Young. I'm an audit manager with the audits division. Representative Butler, sometimes there'll be unreconciled items because it takes a period of time to identify those monies and get them transferred to the right account. Information will come in kind of in a suspense area, and they want to make sure that they are posted to the correct account, and so they take the time to do that accurately. I wouldn't feel comfortable saying that they are too busy. I think that would be inaccurate.
I need to follow up on that, Mr. Chair.
I guess
if at the close of the business day on June 30, I'm going to go home, and I'm responsible. I'm in the Department of Forestry, and I'm responsible for the financial statement, and I'm on my way home that day, and at 4:55 I go ahead and turn off my machine, and wherever the accounts are that day, if I haven't reconciled, or if I haven't made deposits, or if I haven't attempted to finish up my billings and so forth, are they just slopped into the June 30 and that's it, and you take care of them? Or do these folks have an opportunity on day one of the next fiscal year to come in? I thought we held the books open so these folks could reconcile and clean up their financial statements. Yes or no?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I'm correct. They do have time after the June 30th period. The books don't actually close for some time afterwards. So they are actively working on those.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess what I'm saying is that if the books are actually held open so that we can reconcile deposits and so that we can take care of accounts receivable so we can get the various transfers back in order. Is this standard operating procedure for departments to leave things unreconciled and uncared for, or is that what we're dealing with department by department? And then I'm going to guess that at some point you may make recommendations in your management letter to say, perhaps they should do a better job reconciling. I can tell you this: if I had a checking account that 30 days later was still $9.7 million unreconciled, I'd sure want to know the reason why.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, and members of the committee, at some agency there are accounts where there are unreconciled amounts in them. Some agencies are bigger. It takes longer. They have more accounts. The process is longer. Some of those agencies may be limited in the number of staff that they can dedicate to that task. But I understand that your concern, and there have been times when our office has recommended to the agency that they take a more active approach to resolving their unreconciled accounts.
Mr. Chair, I've received the answer. For the record, I am not satisfied with the answer. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
I guess that's all the general comments I have, and why don't we go ahead and have Nancy go through the
letter.
That
would be terrific, Chair. Okay. Go ahead, Nancy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. What I'd like to do first is just point your attention to the first page of our letter, and I wanted to provide an explanation for two accounts specifically. The fifth one down, account 503, accounts receivable, other unbilled. Just want to provide a little clarification there. This is an accrual account for firefighting costs. They're submitted for reimbursement to insurance carriers. The amount, the $17.5 million, the department received almost 94% of that by September of 2004. The remaining million was from the 2002-03 fiscal year fire seasons. So I just wanted to provide a little clarification.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. On page,
Mr. Chair, I would have a question. So at a later reconciliation, we find that there is a fairly significant amount that goes back to a prior year, left in the accounts receivable, left is unbilled. Is it still an asset? Today, we're now at the 3rd of February of 2005. Would I still be able to find a couple of million dollars from 2002's fire season in this account 503?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, when we exited with forestry, that was the balance that was in the account. What's been collected to date today, I wouldn't be able to tell you. We do follow up on that account the next year when we conduct our audit to see the activity that has occurred. Sometimes the process of billing outside entities for those fire costs, it can take a significant amount of time to determine the correct amount and to send those invoices out. So they, you know, they are looking at that and working with the responsible parties. So your question of would you expect to see some additional remaining amounts from prior years, yes, you will see some. And that's what the $1 million that's remaining in that account right now is reflective of. It's the 02 and 03 fiscal year fire seasons.
Nancy, it's $1 million. Is that
cool? Yes, just a little over $1 million.
Thank you. Does that answer your question, Representative?
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, on page 2, the fifth one down, professional services that are greater than $75,000. There was a balance of $16 million. Just wanted to provide a little clarification of what we saw in there. The account is for expenditures for contracts that were originally greater than $75,000. We tested 14 sample items in that account, and the contracts were for things such as janitorial services, personal services for inventory relating to habitat features, emergency equipment rental, fire suppression costs, elevator servicing contracts, Department of Transportation dispatch services, personal service contracts for survey work, and contracts for spotted owl surveys.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to walk you through the findings from our fiscal year 04 audit. That begins on page 2. And with your permission, what I'd like to do is actually start on page 3, excuse me. What I'd like to do is actually start with the second finding on there, work our way through the findings, and then return to the first one. I think it'll help you understand the perspective of the first one.
Okay.
And because there is a lot of information here, with your permission, I'd like to share with you each finding and then see if you had any clarifying questions. That would be...
Okay, that would be fine, sure.
So on page 3, midway down, the title, Internal Controls Over Cash Handling, we found that the Department of Forestry has some opportunity to improve internal controls over cash. We found that some policies and procedures had not been implemented, and other best manuals were limited in detail. We found some assets were not adequately protected. And what we mean by that is that we found that checks were not being restrictively endorsed upon receipt. We found that one check that an outside party had sent into the Department of Forestry had been logged into as receipted, however, was not deposited. So that check had been lost. We also found that some checks that were being prepared on behalf of forestry staff were preparing those checks, were being prepared without adequate supporting documentation at the time. That scenario has to do with payroll checks that were being prepared for a number of employees who were terminating their employment, and because of training and staff availability, forestry felt that the best way to handle that was to have those checks cut. And the individual doing so requested that those checks be prepared. So it was in the ability to request the checks, receive the checks, sign the checks, and then distribute those checks. And so one of our concerns also had to do with ensuring that there was adequate segregation of duties over those important functions. We also found that the department was unable to account for some of the missing cash receipts and deposit slips at the field offices. We make reference to the Oregon Accounting Manual requiring state departments to collect all monies and to design adequate internal controls for cash and for safeguarding the state's resources. On page 4, we make recommendations to the Department of Forestry to further develop the policies and procedures and complete desk manuals to ensure that checks are secured at all times, to provide adequate segregation of duties over the request, the approval, and signing of checks, to provide appropriate supporting documentation when checks are requested, and to maintain a complete inventory of controlled items such as receipts and deposit slips.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
Nancy, I'm going to, if I could ask a couple of questions, Mr. Chair. Nancy, this is an ongoing function of the internal audits to go ahead and audit the Department of Forestry. It happens once a year or more than once a year, less often, more frequently?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, this is a repeat audit that we're doing. We've been auditing at the Department of Forestry for the statewide financial purposes for 3 years now.
Okay.
And the condition over cash handling, it is a repeat finding.
Okay, and that was my, you've clear assessed my next question. It's a repeat finding. Yeah. So they, these internal controls over cash handling, as I read them, this didn't happen overnight. So what was their response to the prior? Because we have to report, according to your information here, we have to report to the CAFR exactly, the CAP, I think. Yes, the CAP, the Corrective Action Plan. What were the two prior CAPs that the department said that they would take with regard to sloppy cash handling?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, and the members of the committee, Department of Forestry really is responding in an appropriate manner to the findings. They are looking for opportunities to improve their controls and to make changes where they see the need. They are working on updating their policies and procedures and taking actions to implement some of those policies and procedures. One of the overall concerns that we did have with the Department of Forestry is that sometimes staff are given the responsibility to develop a policy and procedure or develop a directive, but they don't always have the authority to implement it and ensure that it actually happens. Part of the reason is because they're so, you know, decentralized out. They have so many different branch offices and so different locations. It's very difficult to coordinate all of those activities. So we saw that as some of the concern as well.
Mr. Chair, I find that almost appalling. If you're telling me, Nancy, that the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, but they don't have control over all of the branches, that they can't control the cash handling from the Salem office to the Ontario office or to the Grants Pass office or wherever, if that's what you're telling me, or if this repeat finding continues to be unaddressed by the department, then it's I'm appalled. And is this the second finding or the third finding in this repeat finding relative to the recommendations that you're making to these inappropriate cash handling?
Mr. Chair and Representative Butler, members of the committee, we've been there for 3 years, and this has been an ongoing concern for 3 years.
And Mr. Chair, I guess I'll go back and look at it and on tape myself, but then you said that they haven't been able to exercise sufficient control to be able to take care of these issues in their branch offices. Is there some problem with the communication between the head office and the branch offices to be able to get a hold of these cash? We're talking about a balance sheet that you tested 20 some odd items that are approaching $200 or $300 million, and those are the items that are tested. I'm going to guess it's probably tested from a matrix that would tell you the most important items and those items that are going to be the problem areas. But cash handling is it's the obvious. And if you've got problems in cash handling, I mean, when the brain is dead, the rest of it just doesn't function. And that's where you're at here. And so you're telling me that from three different audit findings, that they have not been able to communicate this concern out to their various branch agencies. In other words, it basically, you give the recommendation, and they say, we're sure going to do something about it here, but it hasn't filtered down to where the cash handling, because this is a cash handling in the mail room here at the main office. This is a problem where they're not reconciling their daily receipts here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, that is correct. Possibly, I want to make sure that I'm responding to all of your concerns. I'm wondering, though, if maybe some of your questions on the actions that they've taken would be better answered from the Department of Forestry.
I appreciate that.
I certainly want to answer your question, though, and address your concerns.
And Representative, we will be hearing from the Department as far as their responses to the...
I may have a heart attack between now and then.
Well, I do know CPR.
Oh, that's
why I am AED trained. Is that any comfort to you?
That is a great comfort to me. As a Boy Scout master, that was the first thing I always taught my Boy Scouts, how to do CPR.
Mr. Chair, maybe I can interject one comment really briefly before Nancy goes on. If you'll remember some of our committee prior discussions on internal audits, forestry is one of those agencies that has now hired an internal auditor. So we give them some credit for hopefully that'll be one of the functions that can help shore up some of their internal controls. We hope that next year we will not be here again.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to say this. If the external auditors are providing findings not once but twice and three times, and the agency is not accepting those findings, is not acting appropriately on those findings, under the current statutes, there are no current statutes that direct how internal auditing, under the current proposed statute as to how internal auditing should be handled, the person would almost be powerless to really do anything without getting the governor involved. So I'm kind of anxious about that, Mr. Chair, but I recognize that we will be hearing from the agency. My concern is that, and it's been an ongoing concern. Legislative Fiscal is aware of it. I've made Kathy Polino available or aware of it in the past. She's been available to discuss this. What happens to these management advisory letters? Are they being actually responded to? You tell me that this is going into our CAFA report that says, you know, that this is a finding, it's a problem, which affects our bond rating ultimately. And then the agency gives you some kind of a platitude that says, oh, we appreciate that, and we're going to do something about that. Come back the next year and find out the problem is either worse or the same. And maybe, Kathy, at some point you'd like to just tell us what you think ought to happen to somebody who ignores a management advisory letter. Not now. Not now. I'm going to have something to calm me down first.
Thank you. Would you like some chamomile tea?
Yeah.
Of course, we don't want to put you to sleep.
Ask me how I feel about this, Mr. Chair. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I think this is where just real quickly I'll make this comment, and that is this is I think where we can be of assistance to a Ways and Means process is bringing some of this to light so that it can be addressed in the Ways and Means process from a standpoint of budget notes and that sort of thing. With that said, let me go ahead and have Nancy and Kathy continue.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if it's okay, I'd like to go ahead and move on to the payroll concerns. Okay. We found that the department has an opportunity to improve controls over payroll processes. We looked at regular employees, seasonal employees, and overtime payments. And we have a pretty long bulleted list there of some of our concerns. I would just like to point out a couple of the ones that were more significant. But, of course, if you have any questions on any of the bulleted items, we'd be happy to address those. We found that some life insurance codes for some employees didn't correspond to the correct age range and put the employee in a position where they may not have had that coverage and should an unfortunate incident occur, it could put those individuals in an uncomfortable spot. The second bullet refers to the public employees' retirement system contributions. We found that some employees were receiving both a 6% differential as well as the public employee contribution. The department was paying both, and those individuals should have only been receiving one or the other. In the third bullet down, we found that there were some timesheets that contained numerous manual corrections that were not supported. And what we mean by that is we found that those timesheets had originally reported X number of hours. Those hours were subsequently changed. There was, in some instances, no indication as to why the hours were changed or whether those hours were changed before or after the management approval had occurred. We also found that the department didn't adequately document the reasons for providing compensation for employees who did not take the allowed and required 15-minute breaks. Because the Department of Forestry is unique, they're doing those firefighting tasks, it's certainly understandable that the employees are not going to just stop in the middle of the fire and say, hey, I'm going to go take my 15-minute break and I'll be back. In some other circumstances, they're supervising an inmate crew, and of course we wouldn't expect them to just walk off the job. Our concern was that there wasn't adequate documentation to allow us to understand either they were fighting a fire, supervising an inmate crew, and in some instances we found that the explanation that was given were for things such as taking time to wash cars. And so we didn't understand the justification for some of the overtime that was being paid in those circumstances. The remainder of the bullets are maybe less significant to that finding, but still important. I would like to just turn it back to you, so if you have any questions. Just to answer, though, the payroll finding is a repeat finding from last year. Some of the concerns that we observed this year, we also experienced last year.
Nancy, how many of the of these bullets? I counted them. There's 11 of them here. How many of these do you think were actually repeats from last year? And I guess what's more important of the first five or so the five that you delineated out that seem to be the most significant. How many of those are repeats?
Specifically, the third bullet down is to repeat the errors in the timesheets. But, Mr. Chair, I could get back to you with specific details on which ones are repeat and which ones are new for this year. I can tell you that the life insurance codes, the contribution from PERS as well as the 6% differential is new. Those specifically are new findings this year.
Okay. Okay. Did you want to go ahead and cover the recommendations?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we recommended that the department correct the errors that we found relating to the life insurance code, the payroll errors, and the overtime underpayments and overpayments. We also recommended that the department look at its processes to develop some routine functions to ensure that those codes remain accurate in the future, that they look at their management review and approval of timesheets, ensure that they're providing adequate documentation to support the decisions and the changes in payroll, to provide adequate segregation of duties over payroll processes, and to review exception reports in a timely manner.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler.
Thank you. So the recommendation, we recommend that the department immediately correct overpayment and underpayments identified during the audit. Now, how do I do that? Do I go back and say to an employee, we overpaid you too much time, we're going to dock your next check? And I assume that there's a procedure in the policies procedures manual to do that, subject to the bargaining of that particular unit. And what of the 6%? If that amounts to, if the double payment there amounts to $2,000 or $3,000 for an employee, do we say we're taking your firstborn? What's the policy in regard to recovery of these kinds of things?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, in the 6% scenario, we would expect that the Department of Forestry would need to work with their legal department and obtain direction from them, because as you've stated, it could accumulate to a very large amount, and we certainly, you know, wouldn't want to put a person in an undue hardship because there was an error made on the Department of Forestry. So whether they collected all at one time, whether they recollected over a period of time, would most likely be a legal matter. For the smaller amounts, the underpayments and overpayments, those are situations that could be easily corrected.
Nancy, somewhere in the Oregon accounting manual, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yes,
somewhere in the Oregon accounting manual, it provides for that that eventuality. I'm sure the overpayments, underpayments, particularly the overpayments, and how they're to be collected. Perhaps maybe you could get us a copy of that particular and share it with the full committee if you'll get it to our committee administrator, Mr. Keller, please.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler would be happy to do that.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead and move on to the next item.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the next area had to do with concerns over accounts receivable. This is a new finding this year. This is the first year that we have audited the accounts receivable at the Department of Forestry, and we found that there were some opportunities for the department to improve its processes. We had some concerns over collection efforts, tracking of accounts receivable, and not charging interest on those accounts. Specifically, I would like to provide a little detail to you on what we found. We sent out confirmation letters to 34 external parties and confirmed the balance that external party owed to the Department of Forestry. And we were a little concerned with the error rate of the return. We found in 23% of the confirmation letters sent out, those parties returned to us that those invoices were in error. To provide a couple examples of
what
that.
What percentage? I'm sorry.
23%. To provide a couple examples, or I won't go through all of them, but we found that in one instance an invoice was sent out in the amount of almost $26,000. However, the agreement, the contract agreement, was that the invoice could not be for more than $25,000, and yet the documentation on hand with Forestry only supported just a little under $25,000, and so it was not clear how they even came up with the almost $26,000, nor was there any explanation. Another example referred to in the letter is an invoice for a little over $5,800 that was originally issued in October of 2002 and remained outstanding as of October of 2004. This was for fire protection. And the individual on, when you look at that invoice, it gives a particular individual's name to call for inquiries. And when we met with that individual, she indicated to us that her records did not show that there was any outstanding balance, and they were unaware of any efforts to collect that information. According to the vendor, there were numerous incorrect amounts on that invoice. There were 80 properties listed on that invoice in total. However, six of the items were, they were being charged for properties that no longer existed. Forestry did resubmit that invoice to the accounting. However, it on the second issuance of the invoice, it included the same incorrect items as had been originally invoiced. In another instance, an invoice was issued in April of 2004, and it was in error because a small portion of that invoice had already been invoiced to that entity back in November of 2002. The invoice was subsequently reissued, and there was a small portion that needed to be invoiced separately. However, at the completion of our audit, that had yet to be rebilled to the entity.
So, wait. It was invoiced originally in 02?
There was a portion of it that had originally been invoiced in 02.
And then when was it re-invoiced?
In April of 04.
So the way I count, that's 18 months?
No,
you said November of 02 to April of 04. That's 17, 18 months before a new invoice was the new invoice correct? And did the documentation support the invoice?
Mr. Chair, let me try and say that again. In April of 04, the Department of Forestry issued an invoice, and the vendor stated that that invoice was incorrect because a portion of what was on that invoice was for something that had already been billed back in November of 2002. So they reissued that invoice shortly after discovering that. However, not everything got invoiced, and there was a small amount of portion that still needed to be invoiced that had yet to be invoiced as of October of 2004 when we exited on our field work.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have some other examples, but I don't know that you need me to go through, you know, each and every one of those. I think we've kind of painted a picture.
That's okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
Representative Butler.
Thank you.
Okay. In this area.
Mr. Chair, let me excuse me, Nancy.
Hang on,
we just ask a couple of questions in that regard, and I hope I don't force anybody into going brain dead or talking about some accounting issues here. You did a 34 invoice positive confirmation of your accounts receivable. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, yes.
What percentage of the population was that when you did your statistical analysis?
I don't have that with me at the moment, but I can provide that to you.
But it would have given you a 95% accuracy based upon your sample size and population.
Mm-hmm.
But when you then receive a 23% error rate, you're down to something in the vicinity of probably, certainly less than 50% confidence level at that particular point. So you're telling me, or you're telling the committee at this point, that we're talking $20 million in accounts receivable out there. Did you go back then and confirm that there was an adjustment that needed to be? I mean, obviously, if people are being billed twice, and or there are other errors outstanding in these billings, did you recommend an adjustment, or did they bring you an adjusting entry for the amounts of accounts receivable that needed to be cleaned up with a 23%? I mean,
Mr. Chair, this is a. As I said, I didn't want to get into any of this this deeply, but on a 34 positive confirmation letter mail out, 23% error would basically tell you have very little confidence in certainly the accounts receivable, and when we look at the errors relating to cash handling. And other internal controls, at some point, and I appreciate the fact that the Secretary of State's office doesn't have the ability to say, we no longer want this client. But at some point, you got to say, is there anything real other than maybe some of the hard assets that they're supposed to be managing? And I'm assuming that there were tests done on those, because the lands and the hard assets here are within your scope of the specific accounts that were tested and sampled and tested. But I guess I'm really having some problems at that point. Excuse me. Did you, and I've read your recommendations, and you'll give those recommendations orally here to us in a moment, I assume, but in that process, did you demand that they come back in and clean up their balance sheet?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, and members of the committee, you're absolutely right. When we identified the error rate and we looked at the confirmations that were returned, first, I do want to say that all 34 did return a confirmation to us, so we did get a response in all instances. And because of the error rate, we did have to undertake additional procedures to be able to certify the account, and we had to make additional inquiries and seek additional information to get to what should these accounts have been, what is the correct amount for the invoice. And one of the things that is important to, I guess, acknowledge at this time is that we did request that, and as we say in our recommendation, to correct those errors. When we certify the account, we do look at materiality, and when you look at the errors and the dollar amounts involved and even projecting that to the population, the error rate was less than the materiality levels, which is very important, because if it is over that threshold, then we would require or demand that an adjustment be made. It was under our tolerable error amount for this account, and we were able to certify the account, but we did have to take on additional tasks and functions to be able to resolve some of the accounts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is somewhat comforting to know that even though there was a 23% error rate, they were not material. However, that said, this was a new finding in the 2004. Did you send out positive confirmation letters the prior year and find a zero rate or a rate of such errors that there was, it was well within the tolerance to still maintain the 95% level of comfort with it and not have to make this as a finding in the prior year? Can you give me some idea what happened?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, this is the first year that we have audited the accounts receivable account. The accounts are selected based on a materiality process. We look at those accounts that are material to the state's consolidated annual financial report. And because of the dollar amount that was in the accounts receivable in accounts, it raised that to a threshold that we had to look at it this year. So this is the first year. So I couldn't say whether the condition existed in prior years. So this is our first year, and this is what we found.
Finally, Mr. Chair, just this question,
yes.
And this is just right across the bow here. These are errors, the 23% error rate, are mostly errors that the folks that were receiving the accounts receivable statement would have resolved with the department anyway, and they were not material in your findings.
Mr. Chair and Representative Butler, that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead. Okay.
Our recommendations included developing clear written top management support for those internal control procedures, including a process for management to review the invoice preparation to better identify those errors before the invoice is going being sent to the entity, to have follow-up procedures to ensure that funds are received timely and adjustments are made timely, and to ensure that outstanding receivables are reviewed for uncollectability and written off if appropriate, and to provide training to personnel regarding the collection of past due accounts.
Now, let me jump in here for a second. You said to ensure outstanding receivables are reviewed for uncollectability and are written off if applicable. Now, where does that fit in with regards to ORS 477, which is the, I think that's the correct statute anyway, is with regards to collection agencies having the department send this over to either the Department of Revenue to be chased down for collections or to then be sent out to a private collection agency for pursuit in collections. Was there anywhere that you made made that recommendation so that when an account is definitely uncollectible, before it's just sort of written off, those other processes are followed?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we did maybe not specifically include that in our recommendation. We do refer to the write-off process if it's applicable in those circumstances. Our concern was a little bit back further than that regarding the amount of error of invoices being sent out. We were concerned that so many invoices had been sent out in error. We were concerned about the length of time that it took to reissue those invoices, and in some instances not all monies were re-invoices, and then just the collection efforts themselves. At times we found that out in the branch locations they felt that it was a central function, and the central function felt that it was a branch function, and so there was a little bit of miscommunication on that. And so to get to the point to say, well, we think this account should be written off or not, we were not sure. It was not clear whether the account was collectible or non-collectible, and that's why we recommended that they really look at this process and set those procedures up to determine that. And then, of course, if it is determined that it is uncollectible, then those policies and procedures statewide are in place to address that with them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, you haven't determined the validity of it in the first place. If it's not valid, there's no reason to turn it over to the state's collection program at that point.
Right.
It makes no sense to do that. I mean, if your accounting procedures don't even give you the correct result,
that would be
harassment at that point.
So the first thing is to check with that. Okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if we can move on to the next item, which was the next day deposits. This is a repeat finding. We found that in fiscal year 02 and 03 that the department was out of compliance with the statute requiring that all funds be deposited within one business day of receipt. The department, for some of its locations, does have an exception on file, and it's due to remote locations and the dollar amount collected at those. However, we found that this year 40% of our sample items tested were not deposited in a timely manner. Some of this had to do with campground fees sitting in a deposit box for over a two-week period. And we also found that just the Central Salem office was not making deposits timely.
Okay.
In this area,
remote banks in Salem, is that what the problem is here? Too many remote banks. How far is the Department of Forestry from the closest bank?
Mr. Chair and Representative.
It's a problem in Huntington, perhaps, but it shouldn't be a problem in Salem, right. I guess. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We did recommend that the department ensure that all department offices are in compliance with the statute, or to look at its processes, and if it really does need an exception on file, to certainly file that with our department. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if there's no more questions on that one, I'd like to go on to...
We're going to need to...
Okay.
We have, what, one more left, huh?
Yes, and then that first one. So there's actually...
Okay, that's great.
Okay. On page 6, we have a finding regarding inappropriate use of state funds. We have questions in the area of relocation expenses as well as employee recognition or retirement parties. We found that, and I'll address the relocation concern first, that in our sample we had two items come to our attention. One was for an employee who received relocation expenses on three instances, and in each of those instances the employee did not meet the policy of the department. And we were concerned with some of the things that we saw being reimbursed. Specifically, we found that the department had reimbursed for the employee to purchase a washer, dryer, and curtains on the second occurrence. for a stove, and then in the third occurrence was $5,000 for realtor fees. We understand that the department feels that in order to gain experience in the field of forestry, one of the ways they can do that is by relocation to offices in different geographic locations. However, with this employee, the individual moved from Salem to Albany, from Albany to Philomath, and then when the individual received a promotion and moved back to the central office, then the department moved that individual from Philomath up to Monmouth. And so we did not understand why the relocation expenses were paid, because the individual did not meet the requirements for a 50-mile rule. In the second instance, an employee was...
So three times the person was moved. And all three times, it did not meet the standard that it was set by the state and by the department for relocation expenses to be paid, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
In the second example, the individual did move the required number of miles. There was 150 miles in the total move. Our concern there was the over $3,000 that was paid for closing costs to the individual. The second...
Nancy. Why is the state paying closing costs?
Mr. Chair, I do not know.
Is that something that is standard in other agencies, that they would pay closing costs for? I mean, in the private sector, we see it a lot, where when there's a move made that's at the request of the employer, sometimes they'll buy the house, and so they'll help with a low cost loan as far as closing costs and that sort of thing until their other house sells or whatever the case may be. But is that part of state policy, is to pay closing costs when a person moves as a request of their job?
Mr. Chair, we understand the policy says that the department will reimburse the employees for normal and reasonable moving and related expenses. In this area, because this was a sensitive area with the Department of Forestry, we did sit down with the Department of Administrative Services, and we took Forestry's policy, the Department of Administrative Services policy. We took the documentation that was on file with the Department of Forestry in each of these moving situations, and asked them to help us reconcile it and see that it was inappropriate expenses. So based on our interviews with forestry personnel, with department administrative staff, and the documentation on hand, our conclusion is that these are questionable expenses that we're not sure should have been made.
Okay.
In the area of employee recognition, and I just want to say the relocation concerns is a new issue this year. This is the first time this has come up. On the employee recognition...
The recognition is a new issue, or the relocation?
Relocation is a new issue.
It's a new issue. Okay.
The concerns regarding employee recognition or retirement parties has been an ongoing issue for the 3 years. We found that forestry provided and paid for things like cakes, refreshments, decorations, gift certificates, and those circumstances were around when an individual was retiring. And there's some disagreement about whether that's employee recognition or whether it was a retirement. Our concern is that state funds shouldn't be used for such activities, that passing the hat or employee contributions is a better way to facilitate those kinds of functions. But using state funds for those types of activities, we feel are prohibited in the Oregon Accounting Manual.
So the state policy is that there, if you're using money, it's okay to use money for employee recognition, like if you're going to recognize a job well done over the last quarter because of savings in the agency or whatever the case may be, and maybe you've got three or four or five people that you're recognizing, and that's okay. But if it's for a retirement or a resignation, somebody leaving the department and it's basically for one person, then it's not okay. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that is our understanding. Yes.
Okay, and then now I noticed here that the department has something about for retirements up to $200, and for resignations up to $100, but that's for refreshments and stuff like that, right? As opposed to being for why is the department policy different from the state policy? Or is that maybe a question I should ask them?
Yeah, I think that would be better answered by the Department of Forestry.
Okay. So let me ask you a little bit more on this. Then, is that $200 for food and supplies supposed to take? Because I'm going to assume something here for a minute.
Okay.
I'm going to assume that a person, they or an agency or a department has decided that they're going to throw a party for even these five or six people that, or 30 people that are being recognized for a job well done type of thing. Maybe they're going to get a little, you know, pin to put on their lapel or a little certificate that they can hang on their wall or whatever the case may be. Is our personnel using staff time to prepare the certificates or the pins, to order them, to plan for the gathering, send out the invitations, or maybe it's just a blanket sort of a deal? Because I think staff time is another resource that we've got to look at, members. $200 cash out of the pocket, fine. Here's $200, go plan. But does that include all of that other stuff that I just mentioned? And the other thing is, would you tell, when during the day do they generally have these parties or these get-togethers?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you're correct. It is taking staff's time to plan these parties, as well as it is staff's time to attend these parties. The flyers that the department posted indicated that these were retirement parties and that the parties lasted for 2 hours. We did on occasion observe these parties, so it's not like an open house where, you know, there's a 2 hour period of time where someone can pop in and then leave. It is a 2 hour period of time that they were spending.
And how were you made aware of these parties? I mean, was it because, you know, employees expressed concern, or was it because you saw the invitations because they were going on while you were there, or?
Mr. Chair, a combination of both. We did see the flyers. We did ask and inquire, and forestry staff did express concern to us, and that's when we were made aware of the amount of time being spent planning these parties and how many individuals participated in. We did observe during the course of our audit two such parties, and then there was another party being planned as we were leaving, and we observed the parties actually went down and just walked in and observed, and there was approximately, you know, 60 to 70 people attending, and we were told that some of those individuals are external to the department. Some might be family members, as it is a retirement, inviting their family to participate with them. Mr. Chair, did I answer your question?
Yeah, I think that answers my question. Well, I do have one other question. I mean, since you guys are sort of there and kind of, you know, in the fold, if you will, because you're kind of there on site and that sort of thing, were you invited to the parties?
Mr. Chair, no, we were not.
They're upset about that.
That's why they reported it. No, I'm kidding. Okay. Yeah. Did you have a question, Representative?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just back to Nancy again regarding the Oregon Accounting Manual for our employees, which provide for recovery. Would you, and you're going to provide that back to the committee, administrator, I'm wondering about the accommodation of amounts, seven employees receiving over $5,000 and two of which received over $10,000 for their moving expense. Are those recoverable, do you think, under the Oregon Accounting Manual? We know.
Mr. Chair and Representative Butler, one of the two that received more than $10,000 was for their new state forester, and that was a pretty extensive process. And it is reasonable that you know, they would bring that person out for a period of time and work with them and have them meet with different officials and make sure that individual is a fit. And it, you know, we would say that it certainly makes sense that you would see some additional expense with an individual member at that level. That's a pretty high level and a very important level. We did feel that those were reasonable expenses and found the documentation for that. In the other areas, you know, we did have some concerns. Whether those are recoverable or not, we do feel that would probably be a legal matter that would need to be addressed with the agency's legal counsel.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, not having read the Oregon Accounting Manual, I'm going to guess it's probably riveting reading.
You may think so.
The question I would have is, and if this is in fact the recruiting of the state forester and paying the state foresters moving expenses to the state of Oregon and relocation expenses, do we have a provision for that, or is that part of the negotiation to hire an executive level employee, which is perfectly satisfactory? I don't recognize that as a problem. Does the manual offer that kind of latitude?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Did you have anything else on that?
I wanted to bring you back to the first finding on page 3.
Yeah, if we can do that kind of quickly, members, because I want to make sure that we give the Department of Forestry ample time for their response, and we're going to run out of time.
Okay, Mr. Chair, very quickly, just based on everything that we have just shared with you and our concerns over cash and receivables and payroll, we had an overall finding that we felt that collectively the Department of Forestry had some opportunities to really look at their controls over financial accounting collectively as a whole. We had just some concerns that overall, looking at each of them individually, you really have to look at the system and realize that there's a lot of opportunities for improvements. And finally, I would end my testimony by saying and acknowledging again that the Department of Forestry has brought on their internal auditor, and we're very excited about that position and the role that they'll play. And also, we recognize that the Department of Forestry has plans to update their policies and procedures and add monitoring functions and conduct site visits, and we'll follow up on those during our fiscal year 05 audit. But it is important to remember that an audit looks at what actually happened during a period of time, and that's what we have to measure against. So we looked at those things that were completed during fiscal year 04, and any future intent is not something that we can audit on or conclude that something's been resolved because they have plans to do something in the future. We have to see that evidence that has actually occurred in place. If there's no further questions, I'd like to say thank you for this opportunity to share with you.
Okay. Just a couple of real quick questions I think you can answer fairly quickly. With regards to the Forestry Department attitude and everything, were they cooperative and help get you information that you needed and that sort of thing?
Mr. Chair, the forestry staff are just a wonderful group of people. They were very helpful. They were very cooperative and really wanted to get us everything that they could very timely, and we really appreciated their efforts.
Okay. So they got the information for you very, very quickly whatever you asked for.
Okay.
And then one other thing is that now I know that there's been a little bit of strife or a little bit of concern, I guess, about with regards to when a document becomes public, and so I know that the management letter went on to the Secretary of State's website fairly rapidly. Can you just give us a real brief when a document becomes public? When is it public? And then the issue around, because the disadvantage for the Department of Forestry, of course, in this particular instance is that their response wasn't due for another 2 weeks after this showed up on the website, and of course that probably created a little angst for them, and I can certainly understand that.
I'll go ahead and answer that one, Mr. Chair. We are always constantly trying to make sure that the information that we have that is public record is available as soon as possible. In this case, we did make a mistake, or because our intent was to get management letters out as soon as possible. Now, once this letter was issued to the Department of Forestry, it was a public record and available upon request. We do have, as part of our policy now, we want to give the agency some time to receive the letter and be able to digest it before we post it on our website. So our process from here on out, since this is new to us too, we're learning as we go along, is to give the agency a couple weeks before that letter gets posted, especially in those cases where we're expecting a response back. We do apologize to Forestry, and we actually had that policy in place, and we had a miscommunication with our support staff. She heard that the letter was done and ready to go, and according to her processes, it was to be posted on the website. So now we've made sure that our internal processes won't allow that to happen again. We do want the agency to get the letter and have time to digest it before it's posted, even though it is public the minute it does go to the agency.
So if somebody were to come in and ask for a copy of it, you would release it to it, but it's not something you're going to post on the web right away. And then the other thing is, Kathy, are you going to also then, when an agency does respond to a management letter, are you going to post that on your website also so that people can see what the, okay, here's what audit said, here's what the agency said in response?
Mr. Chair, we are working on if there's a better way to do it. What we currently do is we do have this report, which does have all the responses and all the letters included. But now that we have the individual management letters posted and available, we're going to work on getting it so that our website is clear that where the link is to their response to the report so that the public can see it and can easily get to the responses.
I think that would be good in fairness to the agencies so that if a person is looking at an audit or at a management letter sent to an agency that their response can be viewed just as easily. So I appreciate your work on that.
Just a quick
Representative Dinkfelder?
Yeah, Kathy, do you have a policy that you will post, you know, within such and such weeks or whatever, as soon as the responses are available? And I'm just curious, and I do like that idea of the link. If you don't have that document, at least you can link and people can see that there has been responses. But do you have any type of policy?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dinkfelder, like I said, this is something new to us because we were getting many requests for our management letters, and so our intent was to, since they are public, make them as accessible as possible. And we did make some mistakes in that transition in our policy, and this was the one that we wanted to give the department more time to get their response. Let me address
it
two ways.
Kind of the trial balloon.
Audit reports are ones where we do get responses, and those do get included in the report and posted. So the day that those are available and released publicly, they will be released on that day. Management letters, in many cases, we don't even ask for responses. We're sending a letter to the agency that says, here's some things that we noticed during your review for you to take a look at, and we don't expect responses back. We are going to also hold those for 2 weeks before posting, even though they are public records at the time that they leave the building. So our policy is going to be at least a two-week window before those get posted.
Thank you.
Representative Butler, did you have a question?
Just a quick, this is at 6:30:04. There's been a change in the state forester within the past few years. Is this raised to the level of a change of director? And I'm not sure, you know, where that's at. And then I had a question with regard to the internal auditor issue. Susan, you say that you're happy that that's happening. So I take it from that you're going to work with internal auditors and in this particular case in forestry and are generally supportive of having these internal auditors to assist us in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
Is that accurate? Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I want to make sure that we need to bring up the forestry folks now. And I think, is that Clark Seeley that is back there? It is. And Clark, you and your staff, come on up. And thank you for being here this morning. Now for the fun part, which is the response, huh?
All right.
And make sure you introduce yourself for the record, if you would.
Good morning, Chair Crummell and Representative Butler, representing Dinkfelder. I'm Clark Seeley, and I'm the Associate State Forester for the Department of Forestry. Joining me this morning is Pam Strobel, and Pam is our Director of Quality Assurance for the agency. She is our internal auditor. We define our function in the agency, which we established last year, as a little bit broader than traditional internal auditing, in that our quality assurance is focused on not only internal auditing, but also performance measures and process improvement. And we wrap that all around into the notion of quality assurance and improving our quality. So Pam and the folks that she works with in our programs, in our field offices, will be looking not only at risk and internal controls, but also how are we performing and how can we improve processes.
Okay.
Glad to be here this morning with you. and appreciate the opportunity to...
Let me ask you something real quick, if I can, Clark. I hate to interrupt you right off the bat, but it does kind of bring up a question. When you have your internal auditor being the director of your quality assurance program, does that create any... Sort of in my mind, that kind of might create a conflict, but... And the reason why is because now you have a program person that is going to. So does the program person then audit their own program? How does that shake out? But the other thing is that, and I understand, and I fully understand and appreciate what you're doing with quality assurance, both internally and externally. But I'm just curious as to, and obviously you think it's appropriate because you've done it. You put the two together. So can you help me out on that a little bit?
Chair Crummell, our intent is that Pam, in her work, is not the one responsible for the performance measurement nor the process improvements. It is her role to, as she does in internal auditing, traditional internal auditing, is to review our current status and make recommendations to management for improvements. So she doesn't run the processes of performance measurement and process improvement. She reviews, just as she would in a traditional internal audit approach, she reviews and makes recommendations for changes and improvements.
And then it's up to somebody else to carry out the recommendations. And if they don't carry out the recommendations, she has the authority to kind of go to you or go to the forestry board,
Mr. Chair,
and sort of drop the hammer?
Mr. Chair, that's exactly correct. In fact, part of our development and establishment of our program is the creation of an audit committee for the agency, and we're currently in the process of creating that committee. And that actually will be the responsible reporting body for Pam and her work. And they then will deal with the recommendations at a high level and hold our feet to the fire, so to speak.
Okay.
One of the unique, I think it's unique today in state government, is that our intent is to establish that audit committee as a fully external audit committee to the department, meaning that all the members of the committee will be outside the agency employment. We also will have one member from our Board of Forestry as a member of the Audit Committee, and that's a fairly traditional or standard approach with internal audit committees, is to have a member of the Board of Directors on the Audit Committee, and that'll be our case. And the Audit Committee will be established this spring and begin to work with Pam on creation of the agency's program.
Okay.
We're very excited about the Audit Committee. Particularly focusing on the agency from an external body of people. I'll serve as secretary to the committee, but not a member of the committee.
Okay.
And I just had a quick question that relates to this, and Kathy may have to nod up or down on this, but I was curious if this management report has been presented, because it's been ongoing for a while, to the board. And is that standard practice that any board or commission that is obviously has oversight in addition to the legislature, that the Secretary of State's office makes presentations to the board about that, and does the board respond in addition to the agency? And that's a three-part question there, but I'll throw that out.
I thought you said a simple question.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dingfelder, our intent is, as we roll out the establishment of our new program and create the audit committee, the board person, the Board of Forestry person who is appointed to the audit committee, will in fact report back to the full board on the audit committee work and so forth. We'll also, from a management perspective, we'll also provide updates to the board. But part of the reason we wanted to have a Board of Forestry member on the audit committee was to have a direct link between the audit function and our internal auditing and the Board of Forestry.
And just to clarify, has this been reported already and presentations made to the Board of Forestry?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dingfelder, this particular fiscal 04 audit has been briefed with the board just in general discussions. Now that the audit is complete and our response is complete, then we'll be sharing the full response with the Board of Forestry as well.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you. I didn't mean to sidetrack you, but so we can go ahead and go on with your with your testimony and move right into your response of however you want to present it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me just, and I'm not quite sure what our time frame is this morning, so I want to be effective for you.
At about 10 o'clock for a few minutes, we're liable to lose a couple of our members, but that's okay. We're going to just continue on. We actually have until 10:30 is our scheduled time, but I also want to be fair in terms of giving you ample time to respond. And so
appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
And as long as if we go past 10:30, as long as any of my committee members can hang in here with me, they'll be certainly welcome to, and I would appreciate it.
Yes, sir, you won't lose
Mr.
us.
Mr. Chair, yeah, we will be able to stay with you.
Oh, great. They're going to stay. So
this was so riveting. We said that we really want to be here. And
that's right.
I appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, if you need us to come back at a future hearing, we'd be glad to do that as well.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Let me just start with a couple of overall comments for you from the Department of Forestry. And the first is that I want to be real clear with you that the agency and myself personally are absolutely committed to improving our processes in respects to internal controls and all that we do in that relative to policy and procedure in the agency. And I would say that we view the annual regular annual audit now with the Secretary of State as one part of that ongoing improvement effort. We look at the recommendations that come to us, consider those with the Secretary of State staff, and prepare a response back to them for those recommendations, and then move forward in the coming year to implement the recommendations that we've committed to. We may not always take a recommendation that they give to us on its face and implement it exactly as recommended, but we indicate what we will do and what action we will take when we respond to the audit. I think that it's also important to mention that as the Secretary of State staff has indicated, we have been on now the regular annual financial audit with Secretary of State for the past 3 years, and in every case we have produced a response with a corrective action plan, and where the Secretary of State has recommended in those audits that we take immediate action to make a correction, we have completed all of those, and we've taken we have corrected action immediately when it's been recommended to us from the Secretary of State. And in fact, most of those immediate corrective actions have actually occurred during the course of the audit itself. We have periodic progress meetings with the Secretary of State staff, and in the course of those meetings, if they bring a finding to us and they recommend we immediately correct that, then we do that during that audit time. We don't wait till the end of the audit. We don't wait till January or whatever until we receive the final report. We move and take action on those immediate recommendations. We have also, as we have had repeat findings over the last 3 years, we have worked to make improvements in our systems all the way along. We take the audit recommendations and findings very seriously. They're very important to us. They really form the basis of continuous improvement from our perspective. And where we've either made errors or can make improvements in our process, that's what we are committed to do in our corrective action plan. And as the years move from one to the next, that is our intent, is to make those improvements as we go along. We're not at all intending or planning to sidestep or place recommendations on the shelf and ignore what has been recommended to us or what we have committed to. In some cases, it takes some time to get the policies changed and updated, but we are committed to improvement and continuous improvement over the time. I think that the last general statement I would make is simply that this fiscal 04 audit, as you see, covered 22 department accounts, and it was a full range and comprehensive audit. We've actually met already. We met last week, as a matter of fact, with the Department of Administrative Services, State Controllers Division, and Human Resource Division staff on a number of the recommendations that are contained within the audit, and in particular on the issue of relocation and employee recognition. We've received now, just in the last week, some clarification of Oregon Accounting Manual policy that in both cases will help us change and revise our own internal policy for relocation and for employee recognition. And we're ready to do that and move forward on that. Let me just maybe stop at that point and see if I can respond to any particular questions or areas of the audit that you'd like to touch on. I know that we covered a lot this morning already with the Secretary of State, and I'd be glad to respond to any of those and all of them, but I don't know if the time is going to allow
okay.
that. But again, I'd be glad to.
Well, let me just go ahead and jump to the employee recognition since you brought it up. And
sure.
in terms of talking with DAS, Department of Administrative Services, looks like I owe one now too. And that is with regards to that, because what it appeared as though is that it's really kind of, you know, from reading your response and then hearing from the Secretary of State's office, hearing from them first and then reading the response, it seems like it's a matter of semantics. I mean, so maybe you can help me understand, since the Department of Administrative Services has given you some further clarification, are you planning on making some changes there, and what types of changes are you planning to make so that because, you know, I have to tell you, based on what we just heard from the Secretary of State's Audits Division, you know, if you have a party with 60 to 70 attendees and it's 2 hours during the actual work time, and let's say just, you know, that 20% of the people there weren't from the department but were from the outside, that would be, you know, on 70 people, that would be 56 people. That's 112 man hours of time. That's, you know, that's production time. And so I'm a little concerned about that. And then if you throw in the wage that's based on, you know, on top of that, and I don't know what the average employee in the department makes, $15 an hour?
I don't know either.
You know, so, just for argument's sake, because it makes the math easier and I can do it,
sure.
let's say $20 an hour. Let's see, 20 times 112, that's 224. That's $2,224 that are, you know, that are being spent. That's and then planning time and some other things. So I do have a concern about that. And so let me know what you found out on your clarification.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me just, give just a little bit of background on this topic. The Department of Forestry has had an employee recognition program in place for many, many years. And that program is one where we have wanted to and desired to recognize service of Department of employees over the course of their career. And not unlike most organizations, we recognize service beginning at 10 years of employment and then in increments beyond that, 20, 30, 40 years. As you may know, we have the Department of Forestry has a tendency to have long career employees. People come to work with us early in their career and tend to stay with us for the majority of their career. Even if they come to us at mid-career, they're often with us until retirement. But we have had a recognition program in place for many years. Part of that recognition program has included recognizing employees for their service when they do retire or resign. And our approach to that has been to hold an employee recognition function and recognize the employee service, recognize that with a service award, as you mentioned, a pin or a watch or something like that, with a plaque, to recognize the good work that they've done. As we have read and understood the Oregon Accounting Manual policy related to non-travel meals and refreshments, we have understood that I have just described to you as part of the employee recognition portion of that policy. that does allow the use of state funds for refreshments and so forth for those recognition functions. The policy also very clearly talks about retirement parties and the fact that retirement parties are not to be supported with the use of state funds. Now, we also have some employees, not most, actually, who at the end of their career and pending retirement, they're also interested in having a retirement party. And if in that case, if that's of interest, then the employee goes about setting up plans to have some kind of function off-site, after hours, usually an evening or a weekend, held at a location like a hotel or whatever in town. And that entire retirement party is funded by donations and registrations for meals or hors d'oeuvres, if that's part of the function. And in no case is that kind of an effort or function characterized with state funds. And certainly no gifts are purchased with state funds for retiring employees. So we really have been in a place where we have understood the Oregon Accounting Manual policy to speak to retirement parties, as I've just described, and not appropriate to use state funds, and then recognition functions, recognition of service, where it is allowed. It, you know, our clarification with state controllers last week, they were clear to us that they believe that the employee recognition portion of the policy speaks to recognition at periods of an employee's career, but not career-ending recognition, as they said. And therefore, they don't believe that the reference to employee recognition is appropriate for career-ending recognition, however you want to characterize that, whether it's recognition or retirement or whatever. And so taking that clarification and guidance from the State Controller's Division, we will revise our policy and not utilize state funds for those career-ending events or career-ending recognition. And we'll clearly revise our policy. One of the concerns that we originally had with the policy on employee recognition when it was issued is that, frankly, it's fairly broad and general, and we were not comfortable that it did not include a maximum amount that could be expended for a particular function. And so that's part of the reason we actually developed our own policy, was to set a ceiling, a maximum amount that could be expended. Now, on the issue of employee time for both attendance as well as preparation, at this point in time anyway, both the State Controller Division policy in the Oregon Accounting Manual and the Human Resource Division policy in Human Resource policy is silent on that subject. Frankly, we're ready to go wherever that should lead us. And in fact, if either State Controller or Human Resource policy is specified or modified to be more specific, that's something we're ready to go wherever that leads us. We have had the recognition functions for service recognition for retirees have been held both over lunch hours during an afternoon, a couple hours in an afternoon, and at the end of the day. So we have been over various points in the day on that.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the clarification because, quite frankly, what you described to me as being, you know, one, a recognition, or and the other being a retirement party, really sounded pretty much the same. And I think that the distinction being that, you know, if you're going to have an event, once a quarter or whatever to recognize employees that have been with you for, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 35 years, whatever the, and there's a, and that sort of thing, that's one thing. But to say, okay, Tom, you're on your way out, because so we're gonna recognize you. It doesn't smell right. It doesn't sound right. And I think that's, to me, that's kind of the major criticism. So I'm glad that you're going to address that.
We understand that, Mr. Chair.
And I think that this is one of those sorts of things that leads to credibility in government sort of going down the drain. Now, with my question answered on what you brought up there, I know that Representative Butler probably has questions with regards to, and he had asked Secretary of State's Audit Division pretty heavily on the first, on the accounts receivables issue, and let's see, was it, and the, what was it? Well, on those first couple of issues that we talked about. So let me
thank you, Mr.
see where
Chairman.
You want to go with your question.
But if I may, Mr. Chair, I want to stay for just a moment on point number six, and that is the inappropriate use of state funds. I guess I'm struggling with two things in this regard. One, the service recognition functions as opposed to retirement. You indicated that perhaps service recognition functions that you thought it might be appropriate to use state funds to buy a gift, a watch or a plaque. Tell me what you believe that the service recognition function, what it's appropriate to do in the use and utilization of state general funds in that regard, please, Clark.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, again, our recognition service recognition program includes the use of an item to recognize that service, and we have small lapel pins that an employee could choose to have as their item of recognition. We have a choice of I think a modest pen set as an item, and so there's some of those kinds of items that may be chosen by an employee to recognize their service. And then we also create, again, a modest wall plaque that states the name and the years of service and the effective date. So those are the items that make up our service recognition program.
Follow up to these issues. You said that you'd sought counsel to try and determine what the Oregon accounting manual provided in these regards. Is the Oregon accounting manual so vague that it has to have interpretation? And where do you go for that interpretation? You go to your attorney general for interpretation of the Oregon accounting manual?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, no. In this case, we talked directly with the State Controller's Division, who produced the manual and set the policy. And it wasn't a matter of really a legal question or a legal interpretation. It was a clarification of the statements that were a part of this particular policy. The policy, again, speaks on the one hand to retirement parties, and it speaks on the other hand to recognition functions. And we needed clarity on what was meant under both of those.
Thank you. Now, follow up, if I may, Mr. Seeley, with regard then to some of these, and I'm particularly interested in the second and third year repeat findings and this notion that somehow issues of cash handling or other important internal controls might be able to be accomplished here in Salem, and it's going to be very difficult to communicate and to bring the rest of your staff on board. Where those are third year repeat findings, can you give us some flavor as to how you're going to change the culture out in the field with those folks who've obviously been communicated these issues before and have refused to or have ignored the policy changes or policy requests from head offices in the past?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I think that I would not characterize the response to our change in policy or presentation of acting on recommendations as things that have been ignored by our field managers. In some cases, it's a matter of the intent or was not clearly communicated. We had a failure in understanding of what the policy was or meant. I don't believe it's universal. I don't believe that we have all of our field offices not understanding what's intended. I think it's isolated and here and there. Part of it has to do with change of employees and turnover and so forth. That's an area, though, that we need to make significant improvements on is once policy is established, then clearly communicating and being sure that managers have an understanding of that policy. Our intent is to pick that up and over the course of this coming year, both of our managers in business services are making rounds, physical meetings, and making rounds of all of our field offices around the state. We actually started that last year. We're continuing to do that through the course of this year, and particularly looking at the payroll issues and the financial or internal controls issues. So those are one-on-one, face-to-face meetings between our staff in Salem and those field managers.
Mr. Chair, my comment to that is a general comment, not back to Mr. Seeley at all, but if you're going to try and patent the line, what we have here is the failure to communicate. It's already been taken by Cool Hand Luke. So.
Before I go to Representative Dingfelder, I just want to point something out because in the cash handling, Mr. Seeley, because in the response, you said we agree that there is room for improvement with the internal controls over cash for the department, but we do have policies and procedures in place covering cash handling. And the question that I have then is that if these policies and procedures are in place, are they being used by your folks out in the field or wherever the cash is being handled at?
Mr. Chair, they are. We have had errors, though, and we'll readily admit that, and we have had some fall downs in some practices. But the policies are in place. They're out there, and we're working to ensure that policies are understood and implemented and working by our field managers.
Okay. Now let me go to Representative Dingfelder, and I hope I didn't steal you.
No, Mr. Chair, thank you. But it's all connected, actually. And I said I'm starting to get a little worried because Representative Butler and I are thinking so much on the same lines. So
it's great.
I had a note exactly about communication with the field
office.
The
question is, who's training who?
I'm feeling younger every day. This is great.
I don't know what that makes. Well, I'm starting to think more like a CPA. That makes me nervous. But I guess, and it's more of a global question again, and this may not be, it's more of a comment and something that I think you need to discuss with the Secretary of State's office. And I've worked in the natural resource field for many years and have worked with many of your regional offices, and I know, especially for natural resource agencies, we have a lot of field offices, and I guess it just makes me think about what our state policy is about regular training. I mean, it just seems to me that there should be yearly or, you know, several times a year, just standard trainings for managers and staff, just reviewing these policies and procedures, especially if there's changes. And I think that should just be, if it isn't already, and maybe it is and it's not implemented, just a state policy for especially agencies that have a lot of field staff and field offices. And I understand that it's difficult, the lines of communication sometimes get a little blurred, but you know, that's just comment to both the Secretary of State's office that we should have regular policies, procedures, and make sure that that's implemented through our audits, I guess, and that consistent, because obviously this is may not be an issue just for your agency, but for many other agencies that have field offices. So just more of a comment.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I could just a quick response.
Please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, I think your point is exactly right. And in fact, again, that's part of what we intend and have intended within our response over the last several years. We did hold an administrative conference last fall. It was a statewide conference. It brought all of our administrative staff together to review most, if not all, of these areas of concern with them. We are in the process of updating and revising our administrative manual, which is the handbook that goes along with our policy to work. In addition, we bring together our managers from across the agency on a quarterly basis for a day session here in Salem, and those are always intended to be opportunities both for information exchange as well as training. And part of the training that we have done and will continue to do is the managerial training that needs to go along with getting the job done. So I appreciate your thought. And
thank you.
I totally agree.
Representative Rosenbaum has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize if maybe I'm repeating something that came up while I was out of the room, but in the case of moving expenses, and I think there may have been some other instances, too, where there were overpayments or inappropriate payments, have the employees been asked to repay those amounts?
Chair Crummell and Representative Rosenbaum, not at this point, and the reason is that, as you all discussed earlier with the Secretary of State's office, we're now needing to look at what is possible and doable under both Oregon accounting rules as well as the legal aspect. And our intent, you talked about, or the Secretary of State's office talked about working with the Department of Justice, and that's true, but we also need to work with the State Controller's Division directly and see what is possible, and we will be pursuing that.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to go back to one thing, and I don't mean to sort of keep beating this horse. going back to the cash handling for a second. And, you know, they having the policies in place, administrative staff may or may not be using them. Do you have in place consequences so that, you know, you've got a field office that basically is not adhering to agency policy? They're ignoring the cash handling sorts of things. These are the kinds of things that the auditors come in and then are dinging you on. Is there a consequence for those folks that, you know, decide that they're going to refuse to listen to the or to follow the directives of the department and to follow these procedures that you have in place?
Mr. Chair, I think the answer to your question depends upon intent. And certainly if we have a case where we have a manager who, in any of our offices, is intentionally ignoring the policy that's been established and is knowingly or willfully going a different direction and not following policy, that's certainly a clear disciplinary action, and we will and can move directly on that in terms of standard discipline. Now, if what is occurring is either a lack of knowledge or a misunderstanding in terms of policy and how it's supposed to be applied, then I think that's a different story. We don't have a system in place that says that due to lack of understanding or miscommunication that we're going to impose discipline on an employee because of that failure. But in terms of corrective action, in that case, certainly we're going to work towards seeing that the manager in question does fully understand the policy and that occurrence doesn't happen again.
So making sure then that the employee is competent to carry out the procedures is one thing. Now, once you've assessed that there is competence,
and
they do understand the policy, they know what they're supposed to do, they know what the procedures are, but they're not following them, then it becomes a disciplinary action.
Mr. Chair, clearly.
Okay, now clearly. Let me ask you this: If you, and generally, of course, and I think you mentioned earlier that a number of your employees may start at one place and then progress through because they're promoted and that sort of thing. So when an employee is promoted then, do you make sure that they receive the training that they need to be able to carry out their new duties so that competence really isn't an issue?
Mr. Chair, we do. In fact, and that's a really good point. Many of our employees, as you've just described, begin with the agency in a represented position and at some point then promote into management service. And at the point where that occurs, we have a new manager, new supervisor orientation program where those folks come in and they go through a program with our staff in both human resources and in business services, and they begin to learn and understand the management of an organization and particularly the policies that are in place. So yes, and that's part of what we do in terms of trying to be sure that the competencies are there. Now, if we, again, the possibility exists that we've got a manager who's been in place for a long time, may not be staying up to speed on policy changes, and if that's the case, then we'll need to take some corrective action that way. Okay. I think the new supervisor, new manager orientation and training, though, is a really important link in being sure that the competency is as complete as it can be.
But it's one thing if they're in a supervisory position from a standpoint of, you know, okay, we've got this fire and we're going to figure out how to surround it so that we can best deal with it. But it's also that, or if they're in a situation where they're the chief administrator for a branch office that takes in money, and the procedures as far as those dollars are concerned are not being followed. And again, you know, we go back to the competency issue then. So a person that's being promoted into that kind of a position then does receive training from the home office, so to speak, in Salem in terms of, now is that because you have somebody that goes out and works with them and trains them in that, or is it because you have this one day conference that they go to and then they're expected to, you know, be a sponge and remember everything that they've just gone through in terms of that training is concerned, or is it a combination?
Mr. Chair, it is a combination. We have relied in the past primarily on the kind of the group conference approach, but as you just described, in fact, again, to repeat, just last year we began the series of direct visits of our business service staff, our finance, our payroll staff, out to the field offices, whether there's new managers or not, and they spend a day or two or 3 days together looking at policy and looking at controls. And again, starting last year, continue on through this year. Those are really going to be, I think, the most effective. They take more time, obviously, but in terms of staff time from here, but it's incredibly important and I think more effective.
Okay. Now you brought up the payroll, and that's another issue. Well, it's not kind of. It's a big issue, and there's some real glaring problems with that, as I could see from the standpoint of the report that we got from the audits division. So what I wanted to ask you about the I got to try to find my notes here. With regards to the payroll processes, is there by any chance a reason why you wouldn't contract with the Department of Administrative Services to be your payroll agent and to do all of your payroll?
Mr. Chair, fundamentally, from our perspective, there really isn't a reason why that couldn't be the case.
Okay.
I think the Department of Administrative Services staff could give you an answer from their perspective. I can't tell you. It's not something that we have consciously thought about in terms of yes or no, good idea, bad idea. I think our payroll process, and of course for the Department of Forestry, generally speaking, is standard in terms of the state payroll system, OSPS, excuse me, I'll put a little mic in, Oregon State Payroll System. We do have some important uniqueness in our payroll efforts when it comes to firefighting. And when we're hiring firefighters on an emergency basis, they have to be payrolled in the state system as we bring them on, and there's some uniqueness there. We've actually been working really closely with state payroll system staff over the last 2 years to be sure that our ad hoc hiring and payrolling of those firefighters is matching up directly and completely with the state payroll system as it needs to. But back to your earlier question about the overall approach, we haven't asked that question of ourselves and really have not asked the Department of Administrative Services the question one way or another.
Okay.
We do have, our staff is, we have approximately 700 permanent employees and then another 600 to 700 seasonal employees depending on the fire season in our agency. We have a payroll staff of two in the agency. plus a manager over those two people, and the manager actually has other responsibilities in addition to payroll. So that's kind of our perspective on.
Okay. And one of the other things that I noticed in here too is, committee, I wanted to ask you, it's now 10:30. Can you hang in there with us for a little while longer, or do you need to?
I have constituents in my office.
Okay, and you need to.
Could we have them come back? It's really lovely here.
Yeah, I think maybe that would be the appropriate thing to do. Would be to have you folks don't mind coming back. So let me see when we can get that scheduled and have forestry come back so that we don't because, as I said earlier, I want to make sure that you have the opportunity to respond but also in reading through the response and everything there's a lot of questions that are there so I do appreciate you coming in and testifying and so
if you or any of the members of the committee have any questions in the meantime, please feel free to contact me.
I think that would be good, and I know Jim knows how to get in touch with you as well. I'll wait on my other payroll question until we have you come back. So with that, then, members, I will go ahead and close the informational hearing on the audit for Department of Forestry, and we will.